Welcome to episode 2 of Harnessed, the podcast of Falling Skies. It is a Monday after the season 3 premiere of Falling Skies returning to our screens, and man, was last night's show a mind bender or what? Wow. An hour and 20 odd minutes of mind bending, and a lot of questions and a lot of weird things. So let's dive right into it. So the series picks up straight away from that 2 minutes teaser trailer that we've all been seeing on the internet, and it's 7 months on. 7 months, which is a long time. And you know what, this is kind of weird for me, and I don't know how weird anyone else found it, but the entire premise of sort of Falling Skies has always been that you will never know more than what the characters themselves actually know. And this huge big gap of 7 months that exists there, it just feels like that entire concept or sort of premise has just basically been jettisoned out the window, which is really, really odd. So it's 7 months on, where we picked up from the end of season 2, which is obviously where you got the aliens come down, and we've come to learn these are the Valm, who are basically like freedom fighters, or so they say. They travel around the galaxy, and they try and liberate planets that have been enslaved by the Ashveni, or the Fishheads, with their Skitter friends. And the new race, Valm, we have now learned, they are an ally who are aiding the humans in trying to remove the Ashveni, or the Fishhead people, from control of the Earth. And the survivors in New Charleston have a liaison who's called Cochise. Really, really strange name. I'm guessing that's a nickname they just got assigned, but very, very strange. But the guy, the character, which is an alien, he's using phrases like most excellent, which is, it kind of reminds me almost of California Man with Brendan Fraser. That whole thing of trying to integrate by over-exaggerating the integration. Very strange, very weird, but very cool. So what these dudes have come along with, these guys have kind of helped arm the human survivors, giving them new medical tech, and aiding them in their fight against the Ashveni. And one of the new pieces of tech which is in there is, of course, and as we open up the scene from episode 1 and 2, I guess, of season 3, is obviously where Captain Weaver, but at this stage we don't know, he's now Colonel Weaver, and Matt and others have taken to liberating Diego, who is Colonel Weaver's daughter's boyfriend, and their group from the alien Skitters, and getting them liberated. And what you kind of learn from this point is that there is an awful lot of new tech which we're going to see, and not least as we've seen in the 2 minute teaser trailer, which of course is the opening 2 minutes of season 3, is these new super mechs that just look super badass. Look like they mean some serious business, and they look mean and they kick some ass. And of course, the new thing that you notice as well is that the Skitter Rebellion, or the members of the Skitter Rebellion, are now wearing this almost like war paint and tribal paint to discern them from the others. And they're actually now in full-on open rebellion, which is kind of really, really cool. But what we also learn here with this is that Hal is now in a wheelchair, completely out of the blue. Hal is in a wheelchair. And you don't get an indication until much later on in the episode that Hal's being wheelchair bound is actually down to that scene from the final episode from season 2 where Karen kisses him when they've been captured, and obviously he's been infected with some sort of an alien parasite or mind bug, whichever you want to call it. And as part of his punishment from Karen, he is now unable to walk, or he's lost the use of his legs. But we'll get into like a little bit more of that later on. And I suppose one of the things that you're kind of ascertaining here with this now is that you've been caught up. Manchester is actually now no longer the leader of the new United States of America. And Tom Mason is now president. And Manchester is basically like a legislator slash general politician in his administration. and that Tom and Anne are awaiting the birth of their daughter. And what you're actually now discovering is that as this story is progressing, the human survivors are now a complete and utter pain in the ass for the Ashvenny. So much so that sort of these strikes are starting to intensify. They've got all these new technologies, and as we're told by Cochise, that they are bringing these sort of new mechs on board to take on the humans and take the fight to the survivors in Charleston, because this is technology they usually reserve for far more technologically advanced races to be able to engage in taking them on and being able to put them away and to basically conquer. And the humans are just proving to be such a pain that they have to bring this tech into play. Now, what you're also sort of seeing in here with this is that while the whole thing of like Hal being in the wheelchair and it eventually gets explained, what's happening here is that right now they believe that as this story progresses and it moves on, they're believing that there is an infiltrator within their ranks who is actually seems to be disclosing information to the Ashvenny. And Hal is kind of unconsciously aware in one respect that he's actually doing it, because what's happening is at nighttime when he's asleep, he thinks that he is actually dreaming that he is going to meet Karen, and he is disclosing information to her, and they're carrying on this sort of a weird part of a love triangle, which is really, really odd and really bizarre and really creepy. And then eventually it turns out that he's actually not dreaming, and he is actually at night time walking out to go and meet Karen, which is then later discovered by his half, Margaret or Maggie. And Maggie discovers that he's having this problem when he's looking for his boots, and she pulls up these muddied boots from the other side of the room in their quarters, and she's wondering like how he has mud on his boots when the dude can't walk. And so that entire story sort of plays out, where you got this sort of love triangle, and again it's a really, really weird one. You've got Hal, you've got Maggie, and you've also got Karen. And Karen, her story is now taking an arc following Tom in the season finale from season 2 killing the overlord who he'd first met with from the Ashvenny. We now discover in this that Karen is actually the new human overlord, and apparently she is far more cruel and far more dangerous than the previous overlord that Tom actually managed to kill. And this is where things start to get really, really, really weird. In one of the scenes where you see Karen on top of Hal and getting off with him, I suppose, in the forest, you actually see that she no longer has the harness out on her back. It's actually now integrated inside her, and you can see her back starting to glow as well. In one respect, it's kind of like upping the creepiness level. And now we've got sort of these alien saviors who are now amongst the humans, who are actually massively distrusted by Guivre, who is now a colonel in the human resistance. And we also learn then that Tom, alongside the Valm and maybe one or two others, are actually now privy to a secret weapon that the Valm are building, and secret piece technology the Valm are building that they say is going to be a tide turner in the war against the Ashvenny, and then liberating Earth from these infiltrators. Now, one of the things which is sort of really, really interesting about this this piece is you're starting to see that Tom is not a president who is sitting behind a desk, who was happy to sit behind a desk in the way Manchester was. Tom is actually a fighting president who likes to get out there and kick ass and take names. And we see that in their assault on the nuclear facility, where Guivre and some of the berserkers and so on are actually trying to infiltrate from behind the facility. And Tom and Guivre, knowing full well that this meeting that they were having to discuss the plan to invade this facility, are going to have this plan uncovered and be discovered by either an infiltrator or a spy within their ranks, they've actually made a separate plan privately for Tom and Maggie and a number of others, including the now mysterious Dr. Kadar, who has been providing power to Charleston from down in the basement. a recluse who's agoraphobic, no less, who's been helping provide power to New Charleston, that they are now going to enter the facility to destroy it, to cut off fuel supplies to the Ashvenny for their new mech forces as they prepare a new onslaught invasion against Charleston. And in the midst of all this going on, there is still this spy, an infiltrator who is roaming around inside New Charleston, and namely inside the ranks of the senior military and senior politica within New Charleston. And we don't know who this is, and this is all being played out rather mysteriously. At times you are under the impression that maybe it's Hal, because Hal, as we know, has been infected by the alien parasite. But there's times when they actually show the scenes of where the infiltrator is involved, and this show has spoilers, so if you haven't seen it, you're probably better off not listening to it. But when Manchester is shot, it off cuts back very quickly to Hal, and you see him out with everyone else. And there's also these sequences where they're kind of pushing you to where you think it's Hal, and they cut to a sequence of him where he's with other people from the senior military force, either on a mission or otherwise. And it's really, really super, super strange. But Manchester eventually does get killed, and I think that's it's a really, really sort of quick ending for him. Like, the dude's in the show for, like, what, two or three episodes, and, like, boom, gone, killed, that's it. And you know what, to me, the guy will always be John Locke. I don't care if his character's name is Professor Manchester in this, it's John Locke for all intents and purposes. But the single creepiest part of this entire episode has got to be Tom and Anne's daughter, Alexis Glass Mason, who's born as a kid, obviously, part of being born as a fully grown adult. She's born, and there's this sort of sequence where you see Alexis and her mother Anne together, and they're in the room, and Alexis is on the bed, and then Anne notices that the daughter's eyes are tracking very quickly in terms of her movement. And for anyone who doesn't know this, who's doesn't know with kids, like, kids don't actually start to pick up sort of movement of people around them for maybe a couple of months after they're born, when their eyes are able to start focusing because the muscles in their eyes are developing and everything else. Then they're able to start doing things like following digits moving across their face, or following people with their eyes and focusing on them. And this kid is, like, literally only less than a week old, and the kid's already starting to do this. And you notice that the kid's actually got, like, a fairly thick head of black hair, but that shouldn't distract you anything, because sometimes kids are born with thick heads of hair. It just happens. It's a factor of things. So anyway, moving on from that. And then she hears the kid laugh, and it's a very, very, it's a very young child laugh as opposed to a baby laugh, and that starts freaking her out. And then she's looking for the baby. The baby has moved off the bed, and, like, anyone who knows what a week old baby is like, is they do not move. They move side to side, maybe, if that. The baby's moved off the bed, and she discovers her daughter underneath the bed. And then there's another sequence where the kid is actually says, "Mommy" to her. "Mama" and "Mommy" to her. And she is freaking out. And it gets to the stage where she's kind of wondering, like, this is just so surreal. Is this something that I'm actually imagining because I'm just so tired and worn out? And the entire situation is so stressful, or is it something that's actually very real? And the end of the episode actually closes on that same sequence where you see the kid in her crib, and then her eyes open, and her big sort of black doughy eyes looking at you, and you're thinking yourself, whoa, creepy. And it does look really creepy, and the kid just looks super creepy as well. Which is kind of, I mean, this entire episode was such a great kickoff for season 3. It plenty of action going on with it, plenty of mech stuff, plenty of skitter battles, and plenty of sort of this sort of 7-month gap history that's being crammed in, and it's sort of backfilling it into you as well as it's going along through it. Now, that was one of the things, but like I said, very sorry, some things I didn't particularly like about this episode was the fact is that they sort of broke with the thing of that you won't get to know any more about what's going on than at the rate the characters do. And that just went out the window, where we just had this huge chunk of 7 months of, like, story and events of things that have happened. Like, no explanation of, like, when Hal lost feeling his legs, how Tom went on to become president, why Weaver got made a colonel, how things progressed with the Valm, how they started to get going, get power restored. So they had power in New Charleston, and sort of the progression of those stories, which was a little bit weird and a little bit strange in one respect, but you know, we can easily sort of move past that. And I suppose one of the biggest sort of things is where you see it, and again, you've seen it in the, when you move from season one to season two, when you actually see how Matt, for example, or not Matt, sorry, Ben has actually grown up, in from going from season one to season two. You see the progression, how Ben seems to have grown up, and you also see this now from season three as well, because so I think what we're seeing here is we're seeing the growth of the Mason children. In season one, we're sort of seeing how Tom is actually coming to terms with the fact that Hal is actually no longer a child and Hal is a grown man, and how he's starting to respect him as a man and respect what he's able, his, what he's doing as a man as well. In season two, we're sort, you sort of see the blossoming of Ben as he sort of goes from being like a 15-year-old, 16-year-old to like being a very sort of important figure in the Skitter Rebellion. And you see his growth, and you see Tom's eventual acceptance of Ben and his importance to the progression of the war against the Fishheads, the Overlords, and the Ishveni, and their Skitter minions. And then in this this episode of, in this season, for season three, first episode, you actually see sort of Matt, who's played by, amazingly by Maxim, like, come of age. Where at the very opening sequence you see him being involved in the military operation to help sort of free Diego and his group, where he's actually the one who places the explosive, and he's out on the front lines as well. So you're sort of seeing the Mason boys going and kicking some ass, kicking some serious alien ass around the place. And I have no doubt that by the time we get to the end of season three, that we will actually see sort of the character of Matt Mason come of age in the same way that his two brothers, Hal Mason and Ben Mason, have gone before him, which I think will be incredible to look at. And I think it's going to be a fantastic story as it goes. So what we're now looking at is that we're now at this sort of this tentative stage where there is going to be another confrontation on New Charleston that's going to be incoming, and the destruction of the nuclear fuel facility to power the new Megamechs. What a great name, Megamechs. It would be awesome. That destruction of that facility has only delayed and sort of been... What was it that Karen said in season 2, the episode 10, the finale? She said, yes, the Overlord only thought of them like as an annoying mosquito buzzing around his face. And the humans are now starting to become really, really irritating. And again, this is something that the Cochise from the Valm liaison actually points out in a military council meeting, is that the fact that the Ashveni are actually having to resort to trying to use technology normally reserved for far more technologically advanced races, and to engage in espionage, shows an utter sign of desperation, and just how much the humans are actually frustrating their entire sort of control of the Earth effort. And so, like, the episode closed out really strongly last night. And very, like I said, with the, obviously you've had the birth of Alexis, and you've got the family back together. You've also sort of got Matt, who's actually now sort of looked to Anne Glass, who's played by Moon Bloodgood. And I love her character so much. This sort of she just a sort of the right amount of vulnerable mixed with the right mix of strength and determination and commitment and just very solid belief. It's a wonderfully played character by Moon Bloodgood. I really, really like that, the way that's portrayed as well. And especially Lourdes by Seychelle Gabrielle alongside her. Just like it's really nice, because it stands sort of in a nice contrast to Will Patton's Colonel Weaver. Just, again, like, I really like anything that dude has been in. Just like a really, really good character. Like actor, just like, it's it's just a he's just a, there's a really nice contrast of characters that are in here, and I actually really like, even though the fact is that each season so far has only been about 10 episodes, there's been a wonderful amount of character development, and it hasn't felt that it's been incredibly rushed, and it feels that like it's very organic, sitting inside this extremely crazy kind of world, in the state that the world is actually sitting in. And it's something that I think as the sort of season progresses, we're going to get to see more and more of these. And I suppose one of the things that I'd actually spotted last night, which I thought was, again, I looked at it and went, holy crap, they've actually got another person who was also an ER with Noah Wiley, which is Gloria Rubin, actually up in it. And she's actually playing a sort of a liaison to, and sort of a PA / administrator to Tom, and Gloria Rubin, she'd actually played the role of Ginny Boulay in New York, for those who want to play TV trivia with this episode. But again, just sort of really nice to sort of see a kind of semi-familiar faces sort of working together and over again, and sort of just as a TV trivia type of thing while we're on it as well. Did you know that Will Patton, who actually plays Colonel Weaver, was actually born in Charleston, South Carolina? There you go. There is your Falling Skies trivia for episode 2. Giving you lots and lots. I'm giving you more. So I think that'll actually do us for episode 2 of the Harnessed podcast. Remember, if you like the show and you've been checking it out off iTunes, remember to give us some stars and maybe throw us a review as well. Much appreciated. If you have any feedback or any questions or any comments on this show and the discussion from episode 1 and 2 of season 3, feel free to send them into harnessed@outlook.com. And remember to check the show out on Twitter @HarnessPodcast. Till next time.